Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio right in front of a virtual live audience during our Smart Talk virtual watch party. February is Career and Technical Education Month. Over the next hour, we'll be discussing the need for and the education and training for careers and jobs that require skills, pay well, but are often going unfilled because there aren't enough workers with those skills. There isn't a one-size-fits-all path for high school graduates and adults seeking continuing educational opportunities. Career and technical education offers students the opportunity to develop critical skills through a combination of classes and hands-on learning experiences, which allow them to apply academics to real-world problems. Now, our program is a little bit different today in that we won't be taking phone calls live, but we will be taking emails and questions live, including many from some of the technical students in South Central Pennsylvania. We've already received a number of really good questions from students. Our email address is smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalk. WITF. Let me introduce our guest for our first segment. Judd Pittman is a special consultant to the Pennsylvania Secretary of Education for STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. And Tom Powison is Executive Director of the Manufacturers Association in York. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Tom Powison, I want to start with you. Are skilled workers still at a premium for employers looking to fill positions?
Good morning, Scott. Thanks for having us on. Yes, that's absolutely true. And that's been the case for a number of years. We do an annual survey of our membership base in South Central PA. And through the results of that study, we had about 360 or more open positions in manufacturing that companies were looking to hire. And over 40% of those companies were hiring at the moment. So yes, the demand for skilled workforce is still growing. It's getting a little bit harder to find those folks as the baby boomers retire. So there's lots of opportunity going forward for careers in manufacturing.
So just to be clear, there are job openings even during this pandemic, but just not the skilled workers to fill those positions.
You have that exactly right. We've had companies, over 80% of them, have difficulty hiring skilled workers in South Central PA. And this is true even through the pandemic. We have a lot of companies that have really done very well during the pandemic and are absolutely hiring and really have a lot of trouble doing that. So yeah, you're correct.
What skills are they missing?
Well, it's really both during this period. The entry-level jobs for manufacturing require a few different things. Soft skills, so the ability to, you know, show up to work, you know, ability to work independently, being accurate, ability to be coached. Those are all soft skills that need to be developed and are kind of lacking in the entry-level workforce. Some of the skilled areas, troubleshooting, so being able to, you know, take a look at your machinery, look at problems, figure out the solutions and implement those. Basic blueprint reading, math is huge. So anyone entering manufacturing has to be proficient in math. And of course, safety is another one that a lot of companies are looking for.
Judd Pittman with the Department of Education. Mr. Powison just described there, is education a big part of that? I mean, because I'm thinking specifically about those soft skills that he was describing. I mean, you would think that some of those things, showing up at work on time, being reliable, that those are things that would be taught at home. But it seems as though this has become something that education, that schools have had to do as well.
No, I appreciate that question, Scott, and thank you for inviting the department on to have the conversation today. And you're right. Schools play a critical role in developing those skills. And we like to call them employability skills because we think they're not just soft skills. They're critical to the success of students in any industry. So the skills that Mr. Pallison laid out, like problem solving or troubleshooting, are really core mathematical skills. They're all skills and habits that we're trying to really leverage our educational system to provide our students. And one of the things that we've done most recently for the state is we did launch our new career ready skills standards. And that really looks at exactly the skills that Mr. Pallison outlined. And another thing that we try to do is look at all the job postings. You know, he had shared the growth opportunities. You look through 2028 and STEM related occupations, those skilled occupations are still growing at anywhere at the high level in those mathematical careers at 26% to on average about 9.6% through 2028. So the jobs are there, and that's new jobs and folks that are going to be retiring in the future. So we need to be making sure that we're getting our kids ready. And we want to take those skills that business and industry are saying that they need, that they desire, that they want our kids to have. And what we try to do is map that and align that to this what we call in education the standards or the practices that we want our kids to be able to leave our system with, whether it's the regular education space or the career and technical education space.
You know, I was just thinking of something as you were talking about. You said that these are really, when you're talking about troubleshooting, it's really kind of a mathematics issue. What do you consider STEM type jobs? I mean, I think a lot of people focus when they hear science, they think of one thing in particular. When they hear technology, they hear engineering, obviously, they think of something. But what, I know this is a broad question, but what is considered a STEM job?
So there's a couple of different definitions, and I think that common language is critical. So at the federal definition, there's what they call lenient STEM and strict STEM. And lenient STEM is when we look at jobs that would include things like actuaries, accountants, the advanced manufacturing space. A more strict definition looks at things, the job opportunities that you may consider like engineering or computer science related experiences. But we really look at it as that lenient definition, and we include those different career clusters in that space. And so what we're really driving for in a lot of our STEM initiatives is to build those skills that are transferable, that if maybe you're interested in green careers, like becoming a wind turbine service technician, which in Pennsylvania has grown at about 61% through 2028, a starting salary of $53,000. Those skills to be a wind turbine technician also are transferable to being an HVAC technician or to be an electrician. And we want to make sure that we can combine excitement and interest in students with what they want to do with the skills that they're getting in school so that they can be malleable as our economy is malleable moving forward.
You know, something, I just thought of this as you were answering the question. I don't know. I kind of look back to the Great Recession in 2008. I know that this isn't when it changed forever, but I know that we at WITF, when we hire someone or we have an intern that comes in, you know, one of the pieces of advice that we give them is be versatile, learn versatility. And when you were just describing wind turbine technician and HVAC, it sounds as if that's something that whether they're young, going back to school as an adult, whatever, that versatility and gaining as many skills as you can is valuable.
It is extremely valuable. And what our role at the department is really setting those conditions for kids, learners, adults to be able to see where there are those opportunities for transferring those skills so that they don't feel like, you know, if I happen to fall on hard luck and I was a plumber or I was an HVAC repair person, that we can be really clear on where those skills transfer and support and set the conditions for them to get to that next space and platform to that next opportunity. So you're right about versatility and the opportunity to be flexible in this space. The economy is, the STEM economy especially, is continuing to change. And, you know, we could really dive into where all those changes are happening. And I'm sure that's some of the things that our students' questions have started to ask, you know.
Yeah. Well, let me ask some of the questions from students that we've received. Some of these questions are from York County School of Technology. And we've received several questions along these lines. My question is for segment one, why is it taught that kids should get perfect grades to go to college and spend their life in debt instead of using their physical abilities and skills in a technical field, or go to a tech school and also make good money? I'll start with you, Judd. That's a question I know many people have, is that there has been such an emphasis on going to a four-year college, getting a bachelor's degree, getting out of school, making lots of money, or a good living, put it that way. And the question that our student is asking is, why do we have that model that so many people seem to follow?
One of the things that we're trying to do at the department, at the Department of Education, is make sure that we're talking about career readiness and career education, that there are multiple paths to get there. And if it's an industry credential, which since 2010, we've doubled the number of industry credentials that our students are receiving, from about 15,000 to 33,000. Whether it's that kind of pathway straight out of high school, if it's to a community college, a four-year university, what we're trying to set up is for kids to be career ready and take advantage of family sustaining jobs and family sustaining wages. And that's really the goal that we have. And the pathway to get there, we need to be mindful that that journey is different for each and every learner, and that we need to elevate the journey that a learner chooses.
Tom Powell, so let me bring you back into the conversation here for this next question from a student. Wants to know, are certain businesses most likely to hire someone based off of what you actually do or what your degree says you can do?
That's a great question. And we were just at a company yesterday in South Central PA. They're a technology manufacturer, and they emphasized, even though somebody has a degree, they put a new engineer on the floor to learn how things are being made. So having those applied skills that you know how things work in the real world versus, you know, theory or classroom base, it's really critical to have. Now, I'm not choosing one over the other, but sometimes in our educational or our hiring system, we choose degrees and classroom information over applied skills. So to answer your question, those are both equally the case. And any job experience, any work experience will help someone grow and round out their career.
Tom, I wanted to ask you also about that versatility. When a student or a person is hired at one of your members and they have the skills needed, or do they just need that one skill to perform the job they're hired for, or must they be versatile?
No, you're right. It is, the name of the game is being flexible, versatile, and adaptable. So our companies are looking for people that have those skills to be able to adapt and change and grow and learn new skills. We operate an apprenticeship program here for our members in South Central PA. We have 40 companies and nearly 100 of their employees involved in that. And they go through a four-year registered apprenticeship program. The companies pay for that. We have an agreement with some local tech schools where those folks can continue on to a two-year degree. And most of those credits are transferred over. And in addition to that, folks can continue on to a four-year degree. So it's a pathway we've built to give people options. There's no one path, but having that educational knowledge, ability to adapt and be flexible is critical.
And, you know, I think we've touched on this, mentioned it a couple of times, but Tom, we're talking about good paying jobs, right?
Oh, absolutely. The average wage for manufacturing in South Central PA is nearly $60,000. That's 20% over the average wage in this region. And, you know, if you're a skilled tool maker or high-end welder or machinist, you can make, you know, triple digit numbers we're talking about here with some years of experience and background and opportunity. So these are family sustaining, well-paying jobs that are there for the taking for our youth.
I want to thank our guest. Tom Powison is the Executive Director of the Manufacturers Association in York. Judd Pittman, Special Consultant to the Pennsylvania Secretary of Education for STEM. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Support for the Smart Talk Virtual Watch Party is supported by TechLink, Ingenuity, the High Companies, and the Manufacturers Association.
Welcome back to Smart Talk and our virtual watch party. It is February, is Career and Technical Education Month, and that is our topic of discussion today, career and technical education. Joining us now is Megan Brightbill. She is the Associate Dean of Academic Affairs, School of Health Sciences, and Associate Professor of Dental Hygiene, and Karen Flew, Administrative Director at Dauphin County Technical School, a member of the TechLink Consortium. Now, one thing we want to focus on during this segment of the program is whether the coronavirus pandemic has impacted the career path of students, especially considering much of the training they get is so hands-on. How is training for a tech career and job different than a traditional classroom setting? Are more students seeing these careers as opportunities? And wanted to, again, thank our guest, Megan Brightbill and Karen Flew, for joining us today. Let me start with Karen Flew. Karen, how are classes in tech schools different than in a traditional academic setting? And I hate to even use that description, but what many people would think of is as an academic classroom.
Yeah, your traditional academic classroom versus a career technical, what we don't call them classrooms in the career technical side, they're called theory rooms. And then the old shop name is your lab area. And so they would move from the theory room to where they would receive their hands-on skill development. So we've been changing the language a little bit to distinguish between that and to get rid of the old, you know, vo-tech stigma and the shop and things like that. So that's how we distinguish it now from a traditional academic classroom.
So during the pandemic, and we actually have received a few questions from students about this, who probably have experienced it. But during the pandemic, since so many of these classes, as you say, you don't call them classes, but that so often they're hands-on. How has the pandemic impacted schools like yours?
I'll tell you, it has been the most challenging year of my career, and I think for every teacher career as well, to make that adaption to one day you're in the classroom, the program area, you might be teaching some hands-on skill, and the next day they have to go online and do remote learning. So it's been a very, very challenging year for the teachers and for the students as well to adapt to that quick change, because, you know, if it's COVID related and all of a sudden, you know, there's a case and you can't be in school. And so it's been a challenge for everybody, parents alike, trying to get their students motivated to get online. But how do you teach hands-on online? And that is so difficult. And so the teachers have been reserving at Dauphin Tech, reserving that particular time to work on online components of their curriculum, like OSHA certification, to compensate and then save that skills hands-on when they do get back into the building. So then there's not as much theory in the building. They can go directly onto the hands-on component because they'll reserve the theory part more for when they know they have to be remote learning.
Yeah, I can just picture those automotive tech students and the family car has been taken apart and put back together a few times. Speaking of which, along those same lines, Megan Brightbill, you work in the School of Health Sciences and Associate Professor of Dental Hygiene at Harrisburg Area Community College. Obviously, healthcare workers during this pandemic have been essential. I mean, they have been part of the real heroes during this pandemic. But for your students that are so hands-on, I mean, I'm thinking of a dental hygienist. Obviously, there aren't very many people that they can, unless they're asking people in the street to, hey, open your mouth, let me take a look. With a mask on, even that's not the easiest thing in the world. So how have your students been impacted by this pandemic?
Thank you, Scott. The priority as soon as the pandemic hit for us in health careers was to get our students and faculty back into our on-campus labs and to our community clinical sites who support our programs as quickly and as safely as possible. There really is no other way to teach a dental hygiene student how to become a dental hygienist than to have them working on patients in the mouth. And so much of that is true in all of our health career programs. So we knew at the beginning that we have to now train our students to work in this new kind of environment of healthcare. Things have changed in infection control. We had a big shift in personal protective equipment. We heard about PPE, you know, all the time in the news, and that was a change. So our faculty had to get ready and learn everything we could about COVID-19 and infection control procedures so that we can teach our students now this new way to work. There was no time that we thought, well, we'll just put a pause on these educational programs because we need nurses and medical assistants. And, you know, the list goes on and on. We had to get those folks back onto campuses. And so we have a team of people and we continue to meet every week to talk about COVID-related protocols and safety wellness screenings for our on-campus programs. So we did have a pause, obviously, when we had to be mandated to stay at home, but we got them back into our on-campus labs as quickly as we could. Now, we do a lot remote. You know, we've taken a lot of the lecture and put that remote. So we've really tried to restrict the on-campus learning to the must-haves.
I'm curious, Megan, whether because there has been so much attention and emphasis on healthcare and nurses and doctors and physicians' assistants, of whether you actually have more students interested in those careers.
I would say we definitely do. Yeah. Another big challenge is working with our community partners. We have students in nursing, even our dental programs, our rad tech, almost every one of our programs who utilize hospitals, you know, our local area medical providers as part of their training. They go out and they observe and they participate. And so we had to, and we continue to maintain communication with our community partners, those clinical sites, because they have their own protocols to follow. And like Dr. Pflug said, you know, one day someone's sick and now we're shut down. So we've had our students in, we've had them have to be pulled out. You know, we continue to work with them. But the key piece is if they let our students in, they see what they're learning and their skills, they want to hire them. And so it works for us as much as it works for them. But we definitely have a surge in folks who are interested, which is wonderful because there's a need.
I want to follow up on what you described, the steps that you've taken to try to overcome the pandemic. And this is a question from a student. The student asks, has the pandemic ruined our new generation? Now, ruin may be a strong word, but the point of the question is, has it been a setback for many of your students?
I would say that it has instilled in our students a sense of determination. Yes, it has delayed graduation in many of our health career programs because we had to wait on getting their clinicals finished. But we've been working, continue to work really hard to get them through. I think ruin is probably not the right word, but it has instilled, I'm so proud of our students. I mean, some of them really struggle just because they have kids at home. They have, you know, not a great environment to learn remotely. Those challenges are the same for all of us. I had to take my dog to the neighbors this morning so he wouldn't interrupt the program. We all have those pieces. And so working in this environment is so different, just that challenge alone. But I would probably look towards the positive and the determination that has come out of that hardship.
Karen Flew, we have a question from a listener who wants to know, what services are available to students that are interested in being trained in skilled trade jobs and are non-English speakers?
Well, at Dolphin Tech, we have a special program for non-English speakers, so that's not a deterrent for them to come in and learn the skill. They can attend school here and have an interpreter assist them as they learn that skill. So we have a system set up for that if they apply to come to Dolphin Tech School.
You know, one of the things that, and we've gotten several questions from students and our audience as well, wanting to know why or how can tech schools do a better job of educating the public? And some have used words like advertising. I mean, that's what we're doing on this program today, is talking about things that many people may not know about skilled jobs and careers. But again, a couple of people want to know, why don't you reach out more? Why isn't there more outreach to the public, to students, to their parents, and let them know that, you know, these careers are available, they're good paying jobs, and you know that there are options for them. Karen, is that something you'd like to take?
Sure. We do quite a bit of outreach nationwide, statewide, locally. We are constantly letting people know about our school and the types of programs that CTE can provide for students. It's a message, though, that needs to start at kindergarten and up, and all the way through to post-secondary if that's what's required. I think it starts at home, and the parents need to recognize that it's okay to go to a tech school and not necessarily a four-year university. We have such a mindset with that old four-year university. Everybody has to have straight A's and go to a four-year university. And that's just not the case anymore. And it's just a change in mindset overall. Guidance need to be trained. All educators need to be trained. There's so many that are still stuck in the old way of things too. And then they don't listen to a student that may want to come to a tech school. They're like, oh no, your grades are too good. You can go to you're good for 4-year university. You don't want to go to the tech school. So there's still some stigma there. And it's an education, but it needs to start at kindergarten. And you know, PDE has been doing a great job starting with the career readiness indicators that Mr. Pittman mentioned earlier, and really focusing in to get that to the lower level now, because that's where it needs to start. And then when the student gets to the age that they can begin learning that skill, they'll have a more informed decision. So all those career ready indicators and everything are leading to this path, but it's going to take a few more years for it to get more normalcy. We host open houses. We give tours, all kinds of host things. We do advertising. It's just a matter of getting people to recognize it, listen and recognize it, and know that it's the value of it.
Well, you mentioned parents, and I would assume that parents parents have to be people who have to be reached with this message as well, because let's face it, parents guide their children very often, and people in many of our students' generations, parents in their generations, you know, grew up with that. You know, their dream was send your kid to college. And that usually meant the 4-year bachelor's degree. And that was your path to getting a good job and making a good living. So it seems as though parents are the ones that need to get the message. Not that students don't, but the parents really need to.
And I would agree with that. It really starts at home, and they need to have the say and that guidance to provide their child with that. And if they go to a tech school, one thing that parents need to recognize is doesn't mean they still can't have their dream of their child going to a 4-year college. So it just depends on the criteria of what a student is looking for, their career goals. But I think we're doing a good job at starting to introduce these career initiatives and these goals at an earlier age. And hopefully in the long run, that's going to start paying off, that more students will be looking at these careers, what is quoted as the trades and or anything of that nature, that, you know, at a tech school, that it's okay. And if you still want to go to post-secondary, we have SOAR articulation credits and local articulation credits for post-secondary when you complete a program of study here at a tech school. That's nationwide. It's in our state. It's very well done and organized. So there is an opportunity to go to the tech school and still move on to post-secondary if that's what the parent really wants their child to do.
You used the word stigma. Arnold emailed us saying the stigma of trade school needs to be tackled in our region and across the nation. So I think he's agreeing with what you said. But Megan Brightbill, Dr. Brightbill, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Something that Karen Flew just mentioned, that just because you're going to a tech school or in a community college setting, in your case, doesn't mean that a student can't go on to a four-year school if that's what they choose to do. But I'm curious, what percentage or how valuable is an education at a community college like Harrisburg Area Community College? If that's what someone wants to do, they just want to get classes, get trained, get educated in a certain skill area, or maybe just to get a certificate. So how valuable are those things?
Well, I'll stick to my lane and talk about health career programs, but I can tell you that the majority of our students, close to 100% in health careers, have jobs before they leave our doors. And that has a lot to do with the community partnerships we build. But I myself am a product of community college. I started out with an associate degree in dental hygiene and didn't really know where my path would take me from there. But I was able to support myself and family, you know, help in that support of them with my associate degree. And that's certainly still true today. In fact, students coming out as a hygienist now make more than I certainly did when I first graduated from community college. But absolutely, the jobs are there, the market is open. And we see many students coming out of our nursing programs getting hiring bonuses and those types of things because the need is so high and they don't need to have further education.
Hmm. Karen, I think this is a question that you may be able to answer. Is there testing available for potential students to help them determine their career aptitude?
Yes, there is. We use a program through Naviance, and there is a test of Briggs and I can't remember the exact name of the test, but it will run them through the questions to see what kind of aptitude that they would have, whether they're going to be more of a hands-on or more of a IT type person. So, but there's definitely several tests out there that will allow a student to test whether they think they should come to a tech school or not.
Megan Brightbill is Associate Dean of Academic Affairs at the School of Health Sciences and Associate Professor of Dental Hygiene at Harrisburg Area Community College. Karen Flew is Administrator Director at Dauphin County Technical School, a member of the TechLink Consortium. I want to thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Support for the Smart Talk Virtual Watch Party is supported by TechLink, Ingenuity, the High Companies, and the Manufacturers Association.
Welcome back to Smart Talk and our Smart Talk Virtual Watch Party today, one of our very first watch parties. And, you know, we can't get out on the road. We often do these Smart Talk road trips where we have an opportunity to get out and to meet people in person. We can't do that during the pandemic, but this is the next best thing where we actually can see faces for the first time in months. I'm actually seeing the faces of guests that we're speaking with today. So this is something a little bit new. During February, Career and Technical Education Month, that's what we're focusing on today's program. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. I'm used to saying that. I'll get out of my routine now. Send us an email, smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are @smarttalkwitf. Some say Pennsylvania must update its science, technology, engineering, and mathematic curriculums to meet the state's workforce demands in the future. What is required, and how will schools and the Department of Education plan to meet the economic challenges in Pennsylvania? Has anything changed as a result of increased attention over the past few years and during the pandemic? We're joined by Jeff Remington. He is a science teacher at Palmyra Area Middle School and a national STEM teacher ambassador. And Judd Pittman, a special consultant to the Pennsylvania Secretary of Education for STEM, who was on earlier in the program, rejoins us now. Jeff Remington, we've actually spoken about this in the past. Pennsylvania's curriculum for the STEM topics, their subjects in school, haven't gotten a full update since 2002. Why do you think that there is a need to update that curriculum?
Okay, first of all, I do want to point out, we're talking two different things. Curriculum is what local education agencies have total control over. We're talking about standards. Standards are a compass. Curriculum is local decisions. So what we're talking about is our state science, technology, engineering, environment and ecology standards were conceived in 1996. They were legislatively adopted in 2002. And since that time, our tests have been connected to them. So I think you're going to notice that in Pennsylvania, we just have a booming economy. According to the PA Chamber of Commerce, this June, at the height of the pandemic, we've had the highest growth sector in tech jobs in Pittsburgh compared to any other place in the country. We are a magnet for these kind of tech jobs, and we've got to have a workforce ready for them. We are close to 20,000 jobs in high-tech fields that we have not been able to fill. And in many cases, people from outside the state are filling those jobs. And even outside the country. So there's definitely a need to ramp things up and to introduce students into these kind of things at a very, very early age.
Okay, so standards. I did want to point that out, that we're not talking about curriculum. I used the word curriculum incorrectly. So what would these updated standards look like in your mind?
Okay, so in my mind, these updated standards are going to be the yeast that makes the bread rise in Pennsylvania. Okay, right now you go to any Pennsylvania school and there are loads and loads of different subjects that are taught essentially in subject silos. So picture the individual ingredients in bread. If you were to mix all those ingredients up and take a taste of them, it wouldn't be as yummy as bread. But you put yeast in there, let it rise, let it do its magic, and connect all those ingredients together in a new form. That's what these new science, technology, engineering, and environment and ecology standards will do. They will revamp how we do education in PA in amazing ways.
Joe, you know, Jeff, you know that is a low-tech analogy that you're using.
Yes, very, very low tech, but we always go with people's food.
Yeah, that's something everyone can relate to.
Yeah.
So, Judd Pittman, what Jeff is talking about, I know there have been efforts over the last few years by the Department of Education to update these standards, but what's the issue? Why haven't they been updated? And will they be? What kind of timeline? What kind of resources are needed?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. And I really do appreciate Jeff's clarity, because that is critical, the difference between standards and curriculum. And those standards are the compass. They're what students should be able to know and do by the end of a certain grade or a certain grade band. And that curriculum asset is really where that there's that opportunity for creativity and flexibility at the local level. And for us, you know, what we did in the last roughly about year and a half was we went on a series of stakeholder sessions. We engaged a little over 1,000 Pennsylvanians across the Commonwealth to listen and learn about the direction that they wanted to see the science standards go. And the direction they wanted to see Pennsylvania go with its science, technology, engineering, and environment and ecology education. And Jeff was one of those individuals that weighed in and gave us great feedback. And then we took that road tour of listening and turned that into our opportunity to revamp the standards. So the State Board of Education charged the department in September of 2019 to take a look at this. And so through 2020, we brought together a committee of individuals that represented all sectors across the Commonwealth, and they put forth a series of recommendations in May of 2020 to the State Board that laid out what that vision for the standard should be. And that group of individuals, we had 183 applicants across all the different sectors, and were able to get roughly about 50 of those folks to work all summer long to build those recommendations for the State Board. And the State Board passed them in September of 2020 unanimously to move those recommendations forward. And currently, right now, we're in that regulatory process. So the recommendations will go through the regulatory process like any other recommendation for Chapter 4. And we're hopeful that in the coming months that they'll make it through that regulatory journey, show back up to the State Board, and get moved forward so that we can modernize where we want STEM education to move forward in the Commonwealth. And there's going to be a great opportunity for continued public comment. So I would really encourage folks to go to the State Board of Education's website, sign up for the email link that will tell you when that public comment opportunity is there. And we encourage all Pennsylvanians to take a look at those standards, those proposed regulations. If you go to stem.pa.gov, you can find the report that Jeff and the committee created. You can find all the support materials to really prepare you for giving substantive and actionable feedback to the State Board of Education as we move through this regulatory phase.
You know, one thing I'll say, Judd, and obviously you're not at fault here, but state government, the wheels of state government move slowly. Yes, obviously, this has to be reviewed, and there's a lot of things that have to happen. But there also seems to be a sense of urgency that there's some urgency here that the standards must be updated because, let's face it, these careers, these jobs, technology, they're changing all the time. Is there any way? I'm almost afraid from what you described that by the time the standards are approved, that they're outdated again.
No, that's a really great point, Scott. And so what we've been doing, leaning into the standards and that process, is I think the last time I was on with you, we talked a little bit about the governor's PA Smart Initiative. And so that's been a $40 million investment over the last 4 years in building teacher capacity, building system capacity to support and build the skills that learners need to access these growing careers and be the innovators, be the creators. And so that investment has started to train teachers. I think we have, as part of that, over 2,500 teachers in our one initiative called the PA Smart Targeted Grants. And in our advancing grants, we've released roughly about $10 million to communities across the Commonwealth to spur those innovations that are going to set school systems and communities and learners up to take advantage of this. So the administration has been doing its due diligence in the spaces that we can control to prepare learners and prepare communities for the economy of the future. And that is, alongside and what we're hoping pushes the standards through the regulatory process. And I think if you would talk to any legislator or any community member, any business owner, we want our kids to be prepared and be able to take advantage of those careers. And this is just, the standards are one piece of how we get there. But we haven't been waiting on just the standards. We've been trying to do all of those other elements that'll prepare our system and prepare our kids for these opportunities.
Jeff Remington, I can see you nodding. I have the sense that you're a little bit impatient, that you'd like to see this happen a little bit quicker.
Well, I do some international consulting with countries that are autocratic. And if you have an autocratic leader and they say this is the direction the country's going in, bam, they go that way. I love a democracy. But yeah, of course, sometimes things aren't as nimble as they could be. But Judd is spot on. The state, I'm one of the participants in that PA Smart program. The state has so many great programs going that are sort of, you know, making the path easier for implementation of these standards when they do come in. So he's spot on with that.
We have a question from Twitter, and this is an issue that is discussed often when we talk about the STEM subjects. So we know that there's a huge lack of women in the STEM fields. What can we implement in education to ensure this population is not missed or left behind in learning these important skills? Jeff Remington, what about that? I mean, the percentages have gotten better, I think, in the last few years, but still, this is mostly a male-dominated area.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's exposure. And as a person who teaches STEM, I do collaborative learning in groups of student pods. And what I noticed is it happens at that age. This sounds bizarre, but having equal balance of male and female in a classroom so females don't feel intimidated by males and they can assert themselves and their ideas at an early age and see that they have early successes. There's great programs out there, Girls Who Code, so many things that can get things going. But people need to see the big picture of all this. And early exposure and giving these girls the confidence they need is what has to happen.
Why confidence? I mean, it sounds as if this almost can be compared to what we were talking about earlier of parents encouraging their kids to go to a four-year institution, that it almost seems as though there's a segment of the population that discourage young women from becoming involved in STEM careers or studying the STEM subjects.
I would say it goes beyond that. If any of the viewers out there or listeners would look at the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal number 5 about gender equality, that is the crux of the matter worldwide that trickles into all fields and especially into STEM. So we've got to look at this culturally because what happens to women in the workforce, those behaviors start early on in schools. And we all have to have a filter to look at that and see what we can all do. As simple as in my circumstance, you know, as much gender equity in a classroom as I can possibly provide.
We have an email here, and I have to smile a little bit because it sounds like a proud mother. Or no, it's a proud aunt, I should say. My niece and her girlfriend started a STEM magazine designed to cultivate young girls and teens for STEM educating, early hands-on experiences, internships, and shadow opportunities leading to passionate careers. They feature articles about strong, racially diverse, and I dare say, glamorous professionals. And it is reinventedmagazine.com. So there's something that you can check out, but a good example of young women being encouraged. Jeff Pittman, we only have about a minute left on the on-air program. We're actually going to stick around and answer some questions off-air. But what about the state? I mean, is there a role for the state to get more women involved in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics?
Without a doubt, Scott. And it goes beyond getting more young ladies involved. It really goes about making sure that we're getting broader diversity, males and females of color, English language learners. They all need to be not just have the access to STEM experiences, but they need to be intentionally included. And what the state can do is set the conditions and remove those systemic barriers that don't allow for or don't provide those opportunities for learners, learners of color, women, to be able to access those experiences. And I think back to my middle school teaching days in Harrisburg, and I would always have the kids draw a scientist. And the first thing they drew was Einstein. We need to make sure that folks can see themselves in the careers. We need to put visuals. We need to get the people in front of them. So we need to make those intentional opportunities to bring women and people of color that are professionals in front of our learners.
Einstein is the stereotype of a scientist, even 100 years later. Hey, I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Judd Pittman is with the State Department of Education in the STEM area. Jeff Remington's a science teacher at Palmyra Area Middle School and the National STEM Teacher Ambassador. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today. This has been a Smart Talk watch party, virtual watch party, and it's been a lot of fun being able to just see everyone again and when talking to them and asking questions. Off the air, off the WITF-FM, we are going to continue our conversation about STEM, about career and technical education. So that will be continuing. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.